Hello, everyone, and welcome to Declarations of War, a special live, not really live, edition at EVE Vegas 2019. I am here joined by January Valentine.
Hi, everyone.
And Matterall.
How you doing?
Both from the Talking and Stations Network, both involved in a lot of the production and content creation from one of EVE's largest media networks. We're also joined by Levitain.
Good day, everyone.
And, yeah, it's Vegas. It's a thing, isn't it?
It's still Vegas. It's 2019.
It's the final Vegas, potentially. Next year is moving to San Diego. And a lot of expectations were laid on what would be announced at this event and kind of what the last hurrah of Vegas would be. So I guess we're going to go around and just talk about our initial impressions of things. January, let's start with you. What was the expectation you had going in, and how did things turn out?
I tried to be pretty neutral as far as expectations. I know everyone had the expectation of, we want to see a groundbreaking feature, we want to see this massive change. And I did not figure that it would be something like that. I was just trying to keep my expectations neutral. I just wanted to see what was there, and I was very pleasantly surprised. I know some people that had high hopes were definitely not, and I definitely saw a lot of that on Reddit. But overall, I'm very pleased with what they're doing. They don't have like a roadmap like the Citadel roadmap that CCP Siegel released, but it was very encouraging. And listening to people talk to CCP Rise after his presentation, people were very positive about it as well.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Somebody made a comment in the hallway, I forget who it was, but I really wish I remembered, that the cautiously optimistic line from the CSM now started to make some sense. Matterall, obviously you're very well connected. And you kind of live in the NullSec world. A lot of people come to you with stories and content. I'm sure they come to you with complaints and theory pitches like, oh, I've got this great article to fix faction warfare and stuff like that. So what were you looking for and what did you get?
Well, what I was looking for is exactly what I got. But I did have the advantage of having felt out a lot of people over time on what was actually going to be presented as opposed to what the desires were. But yeah, I agree that there was a lot of pressure on Rise to deliver. It was particularly hard on him. I had a few talks with him right before and the night before, and he was very nervous, and it didn't show when he presented because he really was talking the language of the veteran players that he was speaking to, because that was the material he was presenting. His job was to basically put out the fires that the summer brought on from players who were wrestling with stagnation in the spring, and then also the erratic features that were happening, like blackout, like increased wormholes, sino changes that really upset the veteran player base. And so they turned that stuff off, except the sino changes. But in to some respect, a lot of the flywheel effect of the summer, the late summer, is still going. We're still feeling it. And so he had to really kind of come in and give them assurances that the company understands the players and their needs. And I think he did that.
I really felt that. I really felt that he understood where the frustration and just the tiredness of the veteran community. And it was really reassuring when he announced Team Talos, the internal team that will be looking at specifically the veteran content. They call it the core game of EVE. He was just like, I feel you guys. I'm sorry. I know you've been hurt, and we're going to fix this.
Yeah, I think Team Talos is kind of the – Team Talos was its own big announcement. They didn't really have any single feature, I guess, aside from the new Triglavian Dread, which looks awesome. I think we all agree. Yeah. But also was pretty expected. They've been hinting at it for a fairly long time, and even screenshots of at least part of it had been shown.
Yeah, there was some leaks, or not leaks, but just, you know, people doing research and surfacing a lot of the features, and so it wasn't a big surprise.
Yeah, so I really wouldn't count that necessarily. So they really, the only other thing they launched as far as Vegas was this Team Talos, which for the listeners, CCP Rise is kind of the balance guy at CCP. I would say that's, it's not all he does, obviously, but kind of his reputation. And this is like his team, and they'll do this really rapid release schedule. Every 2 weeks, they'll be putting something out. They've got a bunch of goals, which ultimately boil down to, like, give people something to look forward to, older players, like, provide new challenges, new things for us to do, which sounds cool.
Yeah. I think you're right. The announcement was the cadence, right?
Like, yeah.
That's the announcement.
That was the big, like, ooh, this is different in this way, because in, from my perspective, we've heard the balance launched a couple times now. In fact, I think Las Vegas, they launched a balance team that happened for like two patches and that was it.
So this might be the third time.
So oh, it's at least another. The third. I think there was actually a fourth one way back in the day. So none of these balance teams seem very long lived in the past. Hopefully this changes. I think the 2 week cadence is going to be a better bellwether for that, because we'll know really fast if they run out of steam and if things stop getting released that are substantial.
I think the big problem that they had is they put these balance teams together and the pressure was so much to deliver these gigantic changes. And if, when problems came up, like Rai said, like he lost a lot of his teammates to the new player experience, they no longer had the resources or time. And so they just felt all of this pressure and they just scrapped it. But having smaller releases more frequently gives them the option of if something doesn't work out, they can table it and bring something else up and release it. So it's not the pressure of just having these game-breaking features, you know, every month. Instead, having these smaller ship balance, you know, structure balance changes frequently, so people feel like that the game is getting attention.
Yeah. We've also heard that too, right?
Well, I think the idea is, and this is something that's new. So the other stuff, yeah, we've seen this before. They formed a balance team, and then they had him as a balance person, and then they said, no, balance is for all teams and coordination. And it's been pretty clear that Rise is kind of, it's fallen on his shoulders to constantly update the ships for balance, which is what a lot of veteran players care about, because they've figured out the certain formulas of how ships should be used. They telegraph that to everybody else, and everybody does the same thing. Then there's a few counters, but sometimes they don't work. So somebody from CCP that comes in and says, we're going to change the way ships work a little bit, throws those doctrines into upheaval, and it's now a new game for them to play with. So in other words, the veteran puzzles that are solved get reshuffled, and they get to solve them again. That's their gameplay. Yeah. For us, some of us want new features and new territories of gameplay to explore, as opposed to just the same stuff but mixed up a little bit differently. But what's different this time, I think, is that they're looking to build confidence, which is they want to say, look, we're going to do this, and we're not promising anything beyond a quarter, 3 months, and we're going to deliver, because we're going to be close to delivery by the time we tell you about it. And they're hoping, I think, that every time, or actually over the next two or three sessions, so basically 6 months to 9 months, they'll win back some of that confidence that players are lacking right now.
And that would definitely be positive. I think one of the things that I was looking for that I didn't hear about, and doesn't seem like it's going to be happening over the next 3 to 6, is we did hear, like, okay, potential changes to autocannons, potential changes to micro jumps. A lot of the stuff coming in.
Blurred the lines on those too, right? Like,
well, and I think Rise made this point pretty clear. Like, we're not promising any things. We're telling you what we're working on. Mm-hmm. Some of the stuff might not happen. I'm telling you that up front. Be okay with it if we run into a problem and we need to swap something in, or it needs the job because it's a bigger scope than we thought, or whatever the case might be. But in all those cases, what I wasn't hearing, that I think a lot of, certainly the people in my corp were looking for, is Blackout was a great way to get people out in space that didn't feel like they needed to be out in space for a while now, the Hunters of Eve. That came at a cost. CCP talked a lot about what they learned from Blackout. touching PvE and people's money making is like really, really dangerous to do because they get super upset about it. But the nice thing about it was it gave this hope that, okay, if we undock and we go on a 50 jump roam, we'll probably see something out there that we could catch. And because they had that potential, they ran into all the other fleets who were thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
And they were getting a lot of fights. I was hoping to see some indication that that was about a lesson that CCP got out of this, and that they found that element to be valuable, and they were at least thinking about ways to bring that in. Ryze kind of had a throwaway line about it, but that was about it.
Yeah. I do want to mention that the boost changes were announced. It is a limit of 25 characters per boost activation, and they will be randomly selected from those within range. This does not include drones or fighters or bombs. So the boost.
And that is Artemis, everybody. Welcome. He's hopping in. Artemis, not able to attend in person, just like Lave, unfortunately. So he has joined us remotely on the Declarations of War TeamSpeak. Artemis, we're just talking about sort of our expectations going into Vegas and then some highlights of what was actually delivered. I've kind of gone around with some of the folks in the room here. Lave, and then we'll go with Artemis. What were you looking for, and what did you see?
From a distance, I suppose looking at the Vegas thing, I really wanted to see something that I knew I wasn't going to expect a groundbreaking kind of like, you know, a function that would bring people back. Because you're right, a lot of things that you've touched on is really valid here, that CCP needs to do a lot of firefighting. There's a lot of things that are broken, so brand new features are not as important as fixing what they've got. I suppose what I wanted to see was a reason to kind of invest, because I've already invested years in this game. Great game. And I want to invest more in it. So it's knowing where the direction of travel is going and how they intend to counter what I think has caused the problem in the initial sense, which has been stagnation and the concreting over of the sandbox.
Well, they did talk a little bit about stagnation, but with not a lot of hard details. I think I would describe it as they laid it out as, we are articulating this as a problem too. We hear you. We're actually taking it seriously. We're going to look at it, but we haven't actually figured out what specifically to do about it yet. They talked about a couple things like maybe further reducing the power of low power structures, which I think everybody involved would probably get behind. But then Ryze mentioned an interesting counterpoint, which I hadn't really thought about, which is if you make them bad enough, then you're just adding like a lot of work for logistics folks to now go ahead and fuel all this stuff, which of course the counter to that is stop putting down structures you don't need and don't intend to fuel. Apparently there's a technical limitation, which is all structures that get reinforced go into low power mode currently. So any changes you make to low power mode would affect structure attacks. Ryze seemed a little hesitant to do that, so maybe another state is mm-hmm. needed. I don't know how technically easy or hard that is to do, but it seems to make sense. Like,
why are we pinning stagnation on citadels? Like, it's not, if you look at the current state of, or the current geopolitical state of Nullsec, like, first of all, I would argue it's not stagnant whatsoever, unless you consider who players set their allegiance with, in which case, yes, that's stagnant, but that's human nature, has nothing to do with game mechanics. And then second of all, PanFam had no lack of structures when they were up in Tribute and Vale of the Silent. It was not structures that resulted in PanFam's eviction. Like, it was the couple thousand man super capital fleet from the Imperium. Like, if these things want to die, or if someone wants something to die, it will die. The structures won't prevent that from happening. It's just that these groups have gotten large enough, and what I would argue is the real problem, stable enough, that's what's leading to the stagnation. It's not mechanics. It's human nature.
Yeah, you're always going to gravitate towards the kind of the large entity, and I suppose to answer one of the points you made there, Alec, about the fact when CCP gave a counterpoint to Citadel as well, this might change kind of mechanics and require more logistics guys. If there's one thing that big alliances have, it's bodies on the ground. So getting lots of people in, I appreciate logistics guys are incredibly MVPs everywhere they go, but big alliances can do that. They've got the numbers to throw at the problem.
Okay, so in to answer Artemis, stagnation is a very big problem in the game, and CCP Ghost data that they brought up in the keynote and in Rise's presentation, that is definitely some what most people are kind of upset about. Now, Citadels are indirectly...
So I missed that data. Could you quickly review it for me or give me a like TLDR for myself and any listeners who also didn't see it?
I don't have it in front of me, I'm sorry, but it definitely was there. And just Citadels are, I would say, directly responsible for stagnation. The prime example would be Guardians of the Galaxy. They fill a very niche time zone where EU and USTZ players are not able to bring the numbers that they need. So they it's quite frankly too difficult to evict Guardians of the Galaxy in this current meta of EVE, just because they could not possibly grind through all of those structure timers that would come out literally between 3 and 5 in the morning. And yeah, it's basically they built a concrete wall around their regions, and that's what people are frustrated with. That because you could look at Delve. In Panfram's case, the structures weren't a problem because they picked up the most valuable ones and left everything else to die. So,
well, but they picked them up because they knew they were going to die. And to your point on the time zone taking, everybody said that about Fraternity, and look where they are now.
Yeah.
Fraternity is not nearly as strong as GOTG. Yes. Not nearly. They had some internal drama where GOTG doesn't, or it has that more contained. You can't really look at that. Test had no problem burning Fraternity to the ground once they evacuated, but they did not really have a problem fighting them when Fraternity was bringing guys to the field as well.
I mean, I think Artemis is right in the sense that like anything that goes on in EVE really is the player's fault, because it is such a sandbox, and CCP really just gives us a lot of tools and we do with them what they want. Like, no one told Guardians of the Galaxy to go drop all these structures. No one told people time zone tanking was going to be the dominant meta. That's like players making decisions. But CCP is responsible for the like resources and tools we have to work with. So the way I would phrase it is, it's a combination of human nature, incentives, and barriers to entry. The combination of those three things is ultimately what makes things happen in EVE. So yes, I might hate this guy. I really want to attack him and screw with him. But that's a lot of work. Realistically, it's not going to like actually succeed. I'm not even going to bother trying. Why waste my time? I'll just yell at him really angrily on the forums. But if attacking that structure becomes easier, it becomes more and more likely that my displeasure, disdain for this guy is going to result in me doing something in the game to hurt him. Likewise, if attacking that structure, for instance, if say CCP took asset safety away, ooh, now attacking his structure really hurts because he'll lose all of his stuff instead of like just getting it in a station in a day. So that feels really good. Now, maybe the barrier to entry is exactly the same, but the potential reward for taking the action is much higher.
I think if you're looking, that's very interesting, good points. I also think that if you're looking at it, and I agree with you, it's partial mechanics, partial behavior. But if you look at, like, let's just say the NullSec, if you look at F1 pushers, they don't really have an agenda. An agenda is set by leadership, and leadership mm-hmm. locks up, you know, depending on what their own needs are. We've had leadership in this game at the top of the major tribes, let's call it, for a long time. There's been no leadership change-up that would happen with more players entering the game and rising up and naturally displacing older players with new ideas and new charisma, basically. So when these old leaders essentially meet here in Vegas and do some deal talking, and I can already tell you that like Gobbins and Mitanni are having dinner. You know, mm-hmm. like they're supposed to be mortal enemies. They were at least a while ago. And who else? There'd be other people at that place. You have Headliner, who does a State of the Alliance right before Vegas, of course, because he's coming here with his announcement on how he's positioning his people, and he's ready to deal when he comes here. A lot of that stuff is not by mistake or coincidence. They're all making arrangements with one another to build the kind of narratives they need to either to keep their groups, because they like leading, right? It's yeah. fun to be the boss. And so they're going to preserve that any way they can. And if that means we're going to tell our players to stop fighting and we're going to give them a narrative for a reason to stop fighting, then yeah, they bear some responsibility for the stagnation. On the other hand, they say, we need something to fight over. Well, instead of fighting over something new, why don't you fight to defend the stuff that you already have? Why isn't that just as valid a reason?
Yeah, I guess it would be no one's really attacking it, are they?
Yeah.
At least, well, I mean, that's not wholly fair. You had a really great war between Test and Legacy Coalition versus Fraternity and Winter Coalition. It was one of the longest modern wars I can remember. Wasn't always very intense, but it was like happening for an extended period of time. It was pretty cool to watch.
Yeah.
But that was like such an anomaly, because most of the time, if an invasion happens at all, it's one of two things. Either a complete steamroll, I think January mentioned like pulling, where the defender like pulls all their valuable stuff out, and they'll go sit in low sec for a week or two until the attackers return home. Then they'll put all the stuff back, and it's like nothing changed. Isk is so easy to make, they don't really experience any severe loss from that.
A strategic decision to pull back.
Sure.
Right. It wasn't.
But it's not defending your space. To your point, why don't you defend it? Well, they don't care enough to, because they're not actually going to lose a lot. It's just really easy to pull everything out. Any rigs or whatever they would lose from the structures.
Casualties of war, yeah.
Sell a Titan of their 1,000 Titans and go put them all back on.
Yeah, but that strategy is to let's bore them. Let's use psychological warfare to make their victory just less of a victory. Because the other group is saying, let's rally. Let's go up there and let's show them what we're made of. And sure, we're twice their size at this point, but let's not look at that. Let's just actually enjoy this. They'll fight, they'll lose, and we'll gain motivation for our troops. So the other side sees that and says, we're not going to give that to you. We're just going to sacrifice stuff that we don't need that actually we can replace anyway, and they back out. had they wanted to, if people really like big fights, I think I'd reach the end of the point, but essentially those are two decisions made through psychological warfare that affect the actual activity and stagnation of the game. Had Vince and Headliner and Gobbin said, for the good of the game, we're going to fight even if we're going to lose, let's go and do it, you would have seen more fighting, and then the statistics would have borne out that people are fighting. But is that really fighting? Because people don't play EVE that way. They play with – it's total war. You play with everything you have. To win in and outside of the game.
Yeah, and what alliance leader cares about the good of the game versus the good of their own tribe?
And keeping it, right?
Yeah. Artemis, what do you think?
So part of my thing with stagnation, first of all, I want to circle back to our topic on citadels and say that if you really want to break time zone tanking, all you have to do is remove the ability of the defenders to choose the day when the final timer comes out. Now, balance that however you will to balance attacker advantage versus defender advantage, but the problematic feature of time zone tanking is the ability of the defenders to choose the day. That's how you get the stupid midweek timers that prevents time zones from flexing to meet their opponents. Moving a bit forward in the discussion with regards to the whole player decision and wheeling and dealing, leadership is continuously at the top of these empires. I'd argue that's because there's no real ability anymore for there to be a deposition of leadership, right? You can't take away someone's empire. After Judgment Day, everyone learned one person controls everything. They have the access lists. They have the tools that can do that. Nobody else has the ability to do so. And the only people you trust are close real-life friends. And even then, probably not very many of them. And with the abilities that we have with the ESI, with the abilities we have with access lists, there is no real ability for some upshot to have a coup. Like, does everybody remember all the freaking coups that happened in Brave back in the day? Like, that is literally not possible anymore. If somebody decides, hey, our current leader is not doing what is best for us, we're not having as much fun as we could have, I want to go do something else, they're out in the cold. They don't actually own anything. The only trust you need in Eve anymore is not the trust of your ally to not backstab you. It's that they're going to show up when you ping for a fleet. Like, as a leader of some big NullSec organization, right, you have to have trust that your people who you expect to do a thing are capable and that they'll show up to do it. But you don't have to trust that they won't backstab you. Because they physically can't. They can't steal your stuff anymore. They can't, like, say, hey, I'm not going to support you anymore. You'll just kick them and replace them with somebody else. Like, there is no ability for internal struggle within these groups to cause a churn in leadership.
I want to transition slightly to this idea that, like, when these leaders are coming in to events like this, what happens at these events. A lot of wheeling and dealing, like Matterall said. Now, there's a phrase, familiarity breeds contempt, but I think we've seen the total opposite in Eve, where as more of these meetups have happened, FanFest, more accessible, Vegas, more like larger, more accessible, a lot more leaders are running into each other. You know, you've got old AAA FCs hanging out with BL guys, hanging out with goons, hanging out with LoSec guys. Yeah, they're fun. They're having a good time. They're engaging in conversations. That they're looking forward to these events, and seeing each other and meeting each other face to face. It doesn't seem like it sparks, or there's room to spark any like mortal blood hatred anymore. It just doesn't.
It's weird. It's like a mixed bag, I have to say, and I don't know if I'm disgusted by it or fascinated. Like, it's kind of I go between the both of them. But it used to be like. I know this, the trope that, oh yeah, well, everybody's too friendly now. So the leaders all get together, they meet each other, they like each other, and therefore they don't want to fight. And that's why it's stagnant. And I don't know if that's completely true, because their interest is not necessarily slowing down. Their interest is keeping what they've got. What bothers me is it seems a little bit Las Vegas-y, right? Like, everybody's here, everybody's partying, they're getting super drunk or whatever. Not all of them, but some of them. And then it's like super sexy on who invites you to their dinner and who's not invited. It's kind of like, hey, you're part of the in club, Lau. Like the null first thing. I know it's not serious, and I know that their Discord is not that active, but they're here. You know, you have like leaders of the main NullSec groups here. At least you have Headliner, and you have Elo Knight here, and you have, and then a few other guys that, you know, are kind of hang around too. But the point is, it feels very, you know, power centric in a very American way that really just turns me off, because the thing I liked about EVE Online was international game. You had a Russian leader who was upset with an English leader, and it just seemed like very international as opposed to very domestic and Vegas-y. And I've just, it bothers me, but that's more of a personal thing.
Well, I think you'd see more of what you're talking about at, say, FanFest, which is a little more centralized for the global EVE community. Vegas is like FanFest US, basically, is what it's become.
Is it like that in FanFest?
It was when I went there. I mean,
people making deals and stuff? Or?
Well, I don't super recall. I got the impression that it kind of was. There was definitely a lot of, like, figures that should be hating each other, hanging out and going to Iceland's one nightclub. All right, we're running out of time, and I gave Lave a task that I want to make sure he has time to do it. Maybe we'll throw in a couple shout-outs, and then we'll close it out. Lave, as someone who could not attend, wasn't following the news very closely, maybe put yourself in the shoes of some of our listeners. What do you want to know? What do you wish you could hear more about?
Oh, one big thing that I was really, really, really looking into, and still loving the guy, LoSec. What are they going to do about LoSec? Not necessarily faction warfare, but I'd be interested to know, have they got anything on the radar?
And I think I can't confirm this, but I want to say that the collusion between the Minmatar and the Amar, and I say collusion with air quotes, really directed CCP's spotlight to how unbalanced mission payouts were. So, like I said, they don't have anything concrete. They touched on it briefly, but they said, look, we're looking at the tier system, and we are looking at the mission payouts versus the payouts for actually plexing a system. So props to the Minmatar and the Mar guys for doing this, but I would expect something somewhat soon, air quotes, or soon TM, that LOSEC is going to finally get some help in that respect.
Yeah, one thing I thought was, I mean, it might sound like a no-brainer to the audience, but it never came out of CCP's mouth, so I was surprised to see it. That, like, they really did see faction warfare as a great jumping off point for new players. And the way Rise described it, almost explicitly, like, they believed in the potential of it so much that they were hesitant to look at it at all unless they were going to make a really big revamp and position it in that way. And it, apparently for several development cycles, it felt like that was going to be a thing. And then it was just under the cutoff point. And so they never wound up doing anything with it at all. And then the next cycle would come around, and it was being prioritized, and it was looking really good, and it was just below the cutoff point. And so nothing changed. And apparently that happened like time after time after time after time. But they spent a pretty significant amount of time not really saying that they're going to do anything in particular, but talking about how important it was and the potential they saw there. And it sounds like maybe this might fall to either the new player team or it could be Rise's team, depending on the scope of the changes.
I think it's another example. It's like the Shield Slave example. It's like they wanted to do this and they were hyping it up. And we're going to have this not game-breaking, but it's going to be really important. And it just didn't work out. It got shuffled off to the side. And they had hyped it so much for so long, people were just so upset that it never came. And I think Faction Warfare suffered from this as well. They're like, yeah, we understand, we're going to fix it. And they had this, they wanted to bring out this new plan, like completely revamp it. And they just could not get it to work. And now they have all this expectation from the players. And they're afraid to bring out this thing that they don't really believe in. So instead of, you know, saying we're going to just break it and start over again, we're just going to have these frequent small updates to kind of get it back that isn't going to cost us a lot of development time. And it's something that is manageable for us to observe and see how it's affecting faction warfare.
Artemis?
I want to actually hit on that last point that January just brought up and say that if I were to do Lave's task and say I'm a random member of the EVE community who watched the streams, whatever, wasn't participating and wants to know more, I want to know more about Team Talos. I want to know who's on it. I want to know every little bit of juicy detail I can get on what they're thinking about, what's on their priority list, what do they think is interesting about EVE? Because I think as a veteran community member, or even just someone who's reached the mid-game, so to speak, of EVE Online, Team Talos is where you're going to be getting your content from for the time being. Everybody else is really hardcore focused on new player experience. Maybe you're going to have some big overarching changes like they said they were planning to do with Faction Warfare, but as we've seen historically, that can just come up short. It could just not happen. So I think if you're a member of the community and you're feeling like EVE is stagnant, not changing, you're wanting more new stuff to go and do, you want more fun, Team Talos is where you're going to look for it. And so as a result, I want to know everything I possibly can about Team Talos and what they're thinking about.
And one last thing before we sign out. all the work that CCP has done, they actually gave us some numbers on the new player experience and how it's improved. Some shocking numbers. 20% of players were completing the tutorial prior to all their work. And now 30% are. which is like, I think everyone was kind of like really alarmed at that number because that's really low for completing the tutorial of your game. But at least it's 50% higher than it was before. So we're making progress. We have to be short on time because our guests have other events to get to here at Vegas. So we're going to sign out with a few shout outs. I want to give my shout out to Mark Havoc. Was gracious enough to invite me to the Pandemic Legion dinner, which is at Fogo de Chao, and it's quite nice. Mark and his wife are two of the nicest people I've ever met in the Eve community or in general, and I love hanging out with them. Vegas is pretty much the only time I get to do it, so shout outs to Mark, thank you, and can't wait to hang out with you again.
I'd like to say thanks to Streamfleet for streaming, well, all the stuff that they've streamed for everybody else, but also Talking in Stations did a show just a few hours ago, and they did all the technical work, so I want to make sure that they understand how valuable it is to us to do it, but also to fans to have that to listen to. So thanks.
I would like to shout out to Matterall for bringing me here and letting me hang out and help him, letting me help with all of his interviews yesterday. It's quite an awesome experience to be here under the Talking in Stations banner. So thank you, Matterall.
I'm all warm inside.
All right. That concludes our little Vegas mini episode. We'll be back very shortly with a more extended traditional format episode where we'll go over the CSM minutes and any Vegas follow-ups that have happened in the next week or so, which I'm sure there will be. Thank you very much for tuning in. And wherever you guys are, good hunting, listeners.